life's worth living, but only worth living 'cause you're born free. Well, my mother has sadly been long gone for many years now, but if she was alive today, she would be absolutely made up and thrilled to know that on the other end of the line, I have the daughter of one of her heroes, a man described as the singer's singer. That man, of course, is Matt Munro. I'm joined on the line by his daughter, Michelle. Michelle, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Neil.
My mum would be thrilled. She was a huge fan of your dad's. Wonderful. And I can remember Born Free belting out when it was on the radio.
Well, I hope her good taste has passed down.
she would probably have words about that. Michelle, your father was a real, I mean, at the time, he was a real hero in a way, because he was the man who took that crooning voice over to America at a time when they kind of felt it was all their own, didn't they?
Yeah, well, we were very lucky, because usually a British artist has a lot of trouble breaking out of England. But Dad had the benefit of having three massive film album tracks, and it propelled him into a worldwide artist. And so, you know, had Born Free. Well, that was massive, because it actually was synonymous for freedom with so many different countries. President Marcos used it in his presidential campaign, and third world countries were using it in times of adversity. It was incredibly powerful. And then people were asking him to appear in Japan and places that he didn't obviously speak the language. And they would have him there, and everything would be up on subtitles. But it didn't faze anybody. They wanted him. And luckily, he was able to follow it up with obviously the Bond song. So he stayed a worldwide artist
ever since then. And I mean, he did kind of strike lucky in a way, didn't he? Frank Sinatra had left Capitol Records to set up his own label. Nat King Cole had died, and he was brought in to replace that
Sinatra had gone to form Reprise. So they had a big gap in their stable, with sadly Nat King Cole passing away. So they took an unprecedented step of signing a British singer. And it was all over the papers. You know, Matt Monro signed a $1 million deal, which sounded amazing, but it was over 7 years if you lasted that long.
Oh, my goodness. and you make the point that if you lasted that long, of course, the other end of the story is because he sadly passed away at a comparatively young age, at 54. Mm-hmm. Now, from your point of view, as a member of the family, as his daughter, I'm guessing in those early days of being out in America, you didn't get to see him much. And, of course, he was gone very early in your life, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, in America, I did see him a lot, actually, because we moved there so that he didn't have these huge distances to fly all the time. It was sort of halfway point in the world. I used to come home from school and get in a swimming pool. I was in my element, but I didn't mind that Dad was away. But, you know, as a little girl, it was difficult, because Dad had a very impoverished background, a very unstable, went to five different schools. His home was bombed out, and he wanted us to have stability that he hadn't had. So for that reason, he wouldn't take us out of school. So in England, we were lucky if he did a summer season, because it meant we'd go to the town he was working in, rent a house for the summer, and we'd see him every day. But no, in the later years, he was spending 9 months of every year abroad.
Yeah, indeed. And so when you decided to do his biography, was that a conscious decision by you, or were you asked to do it? How did that come about?
It came about because I had a near-fatal car crash in America, and they were literally cutting me out of the wreckage. And I suddenly had this awful thought that if I didn't make it, my son would never know his roots, or anything about Daddy, apart from he was a singer. And it really shook me to the core. Luckily, I got better. And so I decided that I would write the book for my son. At that point, I hadn't even decided to publish it. But I found it very cathartic in one way. And it was like doing a massive jigsaw puzzle. And you get a piece and you got so excited, but then realised you had another 999 pieces to go. Because, you know, that was 30 when I was born, and so there was a life that I wasn't, you know, right there in the front line with him on.
Sure.
And I did find people he was evacuated with, people he was in the army with, and that was amazing. You know, so many wonderful people, you know, thankfully through the advent of the internet, I was able to touch, you know, with people all around the world.
It is amazing. And did you sort of change your view of him in a way? Did you get to understand him in a different way? Because you, in doing that research, I guess very few people do that level of research into their own parents.
Yes. Well, I mean, I did interview more than 200 people. And I did say to Mum, which see, the thing is, Daddy was very underrated in England, especially as far as Mum was concerned. And she wanted a book out because she knew it would sit in the British Library forever. And she said, no one then can take that away from Dad. So she was very gung-ho on it. But I did say to her, Mom, I'm not going to write a fairy tale. So, you know, you have to be prepared. So then I did ask some very hard-hitting questions. I won't say trying to get dirt on him, but trying to unearth something. And all I got was, oh, he was a great guy. I loved him as a brother. You know, it went that deep. And I just couldn't get anything. And I don't mean that nastily. He was just a nice guy.
I was going to say, my mother always said that of him. And he just always did sound, seemed just like a very nice man.
And because he was so humble, he never understood what all the fuss was about, to be honest. I mean, if he was any more laid back, he'd have had rigor mortis, you know. He wanted to just go on and perform. To him, that was the greatest thing, being able to touch sort of hands and people's heart through performing live. And that's all he was interested in doing. The bills he left to Mum.
Oh, fair enough.
You know, it was just, it was a passion. It was the gift, you know. He went to a singing teacher once. A very renowned gentleman, and the guy said to him, yours is a gift from God. He said, I can't do anything with it, just go away and look after it. So Dad didn't presume to argue.
My goodness me. Now, it's coming up on the anniversary of the 90th year of his birth, the 60th anniversary of his first hit, which was Portrait of My Love, and you've got a new double CD out. But there's the first CD is called The Lost New York Sessions, and this is all about some tapes that were found lurking in a vault at Capitol Records. Is that right?
Yes, well, what had happened is while he was signed to Capitol, so when Daddy was in England, he obviously was with George Martin, and they took a long time to know their trade, if you like. George would come to the house with Dad's musical director. They would talk through what they were going to have on a track, how many musicians they would rehearse, and by the time they went in the studio, everybody knew what they were doing. In Capitol in L.A., Dad was made to record 5 albums in 13 months.
Good Lord.
It was a conveyor belt. It was a cash cow. And that didn't include the boatload of singles either, you know. Mm. So it was a whole different process. But he's gone in and he wanted to do something different. As you know, Neil, Dad's known for the big bands and the huge orchestras. And he wanted to pair it all back. And he went in with 5 musicians, piano, bass, drums, and 2 guitars. He went in, and it was for an album called Invitation to Broadway. So he laid the tracks, he listened back to them, he loved it, and off he went to work. Well, unbeknown to him, the producer, Dave Kavanagh, decided he wanted the big orchestrations on the album. So he overdubbed it with all this instrumentation.
Oh, no.
Oh, and all this extra brass. Well, Daddy went mad, and he said they butchered the tracks, and he didn't want anything more to do with it. So the project was shelved. And then EMI, very, very nicely, gave me carte blanche to do the projects I wanted to do for about 15 years. I didn't want to keep doing the best ofs and the greatest hits.
Sure.
So we did, you know, ones with Nelson Riddle. I did a couple of live albums. The Rare Monroe is one of my favourites. And this would have been the last project. And then, sadly, EMI closed. So it was, in essence, shelved again. And then Universal came to me a year and a half ago and said, have you got anything in mind? And I knew it was obviously the anniversary, and I thought, do you know what, I'd really like to bring this out the way Dad has intended it. And nobody's heard him sing an album like this, and it's just, I was gobsmacked at the quality of his voice. with a huge orchestra, you can hide a little bit. You could cheat a little bit. But here, his voice is like the sixth instrument, and it's just this beautiful voice. It's just effortless. The breath control. I often listen to singers, and I can hear them breathe in between lines, and yet I cannot hear Dad breathe on it. It just seems to be so seamless.
That's amazing. It's amazing. And it's bringing his voice to a whole new generation. This often gets said, but it really is. And it's doing extremely well already. Number eight, is that right? Straight in at eight on the iTunes chart?
No, the official albums chart.
Beg your pardon?
I'm so chuffed. I mean, it's 15 years since we had a chart success. It's just wonderful, especially, unfortunately, in the circumstances the country's going through. To bring an album out that last week was not the best timing, but the fans have spoken and we've sold out. And sadly, it's good news in one way, but sad in another, because I don't think we can sustain it for a second week because there's just nowhere to get sales. And whereas the younger artists, their fans are all into these downloads and uploads and whatever streams. Dad's fans, a lot of them do like the physical product.
Yeah.
But you know what? Doesn't matter. We've done it. And I think it's the most wonderful accolade to Daddy, from anybody. Whoever bought the album, I'm so grateful. And the praise has been fabulous. I mean, honestly, I know it's my dad and I'm biased, but it is such a great album. I work on the cruise ships, Neil, doing talks on Dad's life and music. And I get about 500 people a time, and I'm always knocked out by the range of ages that come in, and often pull a couple of the young ones aside and say, well, you dragged in here, you know. And it's because of those age ranges, I thought, do you know what, I'm going to couple this album with a bonus disc, if you like. So I did 27 of his, the best-known tracks he's synonymous with.
Indeed.
Because I thought that way they've got a really good start to a collection. But then again, the staunch fan has got enough to be excited about as well.
Indeed, it just sounds really exciting. And as I say, I mean, good singers, the young audience, you know, we do them down. Good, they appreciate a good voice, they really do. And there's a lot to be learned from your father, because as you say, yeah, everyone else used to say, I think, was it Sinatra said, he hits every note, he enunciates every word. You know, there's no beating it.
There was a huge stable coming out of the 60s, and you could fill radio shows of artists, tracks for weeks without repeating a song. But if you say to somebody, name me five artists from 10 years ago, they kind of look at you.
Yeah.
And that's the point. There's no longevity anymore. And so I do think that the artists from the 60s will always be played because it was good music. I mean, 60 years, as you said, portraits of my love. And yet, it could have been recorded last week.
Absolutely.
It hasn't dated, you know.
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, Michelle, it's been a joy to speak to you and to learn more about your father. The book is out. How can people get the book? That, presumably, you can get online.
Yes, on Amazon and those sort of sites. It's called Singer, Singer, The Life and Music of Matt Monroe. And the new album, of course, is called Stranger in Paradise, The Lost New York Sessions.
Oh, well, Michelle, it's been an absolute joy to speak to you. And thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
No, thank you, Neil.
There we are. That's the lovely Michelle Monroe. I was speaking to her earlier. We'll play that brand new single, Stranger in Paradise, the way Matt Monroe would have had it released if he'd had his way, right after this.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Every day, people in the world's poorest places become